Thursday afternoon at the Web 2.0 Summit 2006 wrapped up with a conversation with Microsoft Chief Software Architect Ray Ozzie. A year ago, Ozzie sent a famously leaked memo about how the world in which Microsoft software is released has changed. Ozzie talks about Vista and working with other very complex projects. This podcast is brought to you by the Intel Software Network. Look for opportunity in using the web as a platform, using innovation to drive collective intelligence. The Intel Software Network did just that. Intel Software Network developer communities enable you to create and build innovative applications and solutions. Connect and share ideas today. Join the conversation in the Intel Software Network at intel.com/software. Here's Microsoft's Ray Ozzie with Web 2.0 Summit Program Chair John Battelle.
Many of you may recall the memo that was written by Ray a year ago, which was kind of one of these great internet tidal wave memos that are so famously come out every decade from Microsoft. So with that, I'd like to bring Ray Ozzie, the Chief Software Architect of Microsoft, up. Thank you for coming and for being, you know, willing to talk to me.
Thanks for having me. Congratulations on a pretty successful, at least measuring by the buzz.
I'm glad to hear that. Yeah, I'm too busy taking notes and trying to catch up here to know what's going on, but I hope you guys are enjoying it. So I promise I won't ask you about quarterlies and P&Ls.
Thank you.
Twice. Maybe once, but not twice. But let me start with the preamble that I brought up, this memo that you wrote, which was preceded a few days before with an announcement that Bill Gates sent around to, well, we've all seen the whole email. It's on the web. If you just search for it, Bill's email's on the web, thanks to Dave Weiner and some other folks, where he announced that you were going to take over the service-driven kind of portion of the business, and you were going to be responsible for kind of this transformation. At Microsoft. And then some days later, this memo was leaked. Was it really leaked?
Yeah, it really was leaked.
Okay.
It
was very successfully leaked.
Oh, no. It leaked.
It leaked.
It wasn't leaked.
It leaked. It wasn't.
It leaked.
I feel like I'm talking to Bill Clinton here. Depends on the definition of leaked. But the memo was eloquent and honest, and it talked about some of the issues that Microsoft might... And the language was very aware of... It was really almost, you know, you were a stranger in a strange land, and you were trying to really shake these guys up a little bit, but not freak them out, you know? And it's been a year. You wrote it in September of last year.
Yep.
And since then, your role has changed again. So, two-part question. How has your role changed? And how is it going after a year of kind of shaking up things with that memo?
It's going well. It's a large organization, and there are many, many products. It's a very broad challenge and a very broad opportunity. And when I came to the company, I could see that some people really got it with respect to the shift that the industry is in right now. And some people were heads down, basically working on Vista, working on Office, working on whatever product they had. And I really felt the need to get a broader message across that this is something that everybody really needs to pay attention to, because it's fundamentally going to impact every one of the offerings over time. The intent of that memo wasn't to prescriptively say you should do X, you should do Y, you should do Z, but more or less to start people thinking about it. I think in June, when Bill announced his transition, I think it more or less caused a bunch of people to go back and reread the memo.
internally. I bet it did.
I think the first go around, people probably read it and said, interesting, and then the second time people read it, people went, And now we're at a very interesting juncture with Office done, with Vista done.
Well, let's define done.
Release to manufacturing.
In a world where people update their software every day or every week. Yep. What does that mean, release to manufacturing?
Release to manufacturing means it went through an immense amount of testing. It went out to many people. It means that when it goes out, it will not be perfect.
Right.
It will be updated. There will be a great set of drivers, more drivers than there were for Vista at that point in time, but there will still be missing drivers. And at the point that it is right now, it's feeling really good in terms of the amount of internal deployment that we've had. I've used it for quite a while. Is it perfect? No, it's software, and it will have flaws. But it's fulfilling the role that I believe an operating system really, really needs to have in this era. Back when XP was launched, the internet was a far different place than it is right now. The amount of attacks that are going on just very, very commonly right now out on the net is just tremendous. And the biggest single thing that Vista can really do is to provide a safe environment within which you can do your interaction on the web, a safe environment that you can load code onto, and try to load code in a way that doesn't leave itself as open as Vista and other operating systems did before it in terms of just installing Trojans and things like that.
Right.
And Vista was really secure by design. It's undergone a tremendous amount of static analysis of the code to make sure that we did the best possible job we could, given the surface area of the product, to make sure that that vulnerabilities were removed before it was shipped. So,
So when is it coming out?
It is released to businesses by the end of November. It'll be released to consumers by the end of January, and things are on.
And same
on
for track. Office as well?
Office is released to manufacturing. Yep, the launch event is, I think, November 30th.
Who's playing?
Who's playing?
We saw the Rolling Stones last time.
Yeah.
They're still around. I bet they're not as expensive as they were last time.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go back to the thrust of the memo. Mm-hmm. There's one thing. I mean, first I want to talk culturally, mm-hmm. and then get to the specifics of the service-based
sure.
architecture. There's this great quote in the which of course I can't find now, but in which you gave one concrete example that I thought was a really great kind of cultural anecdote,
mm-hmm.
in which you said, I found in my experience when you're working with teams, it's good if, for example, they sit together in the same space.
Mm-hmm.
For a memo that was really, laying out a lot of broad strokes and explaining, some big ideas, to then drop into this very specific example of, let's not just have meetings and then do emails afterwards. Let's actually just sit in the same space and work. That sounds like what you were doing when you were running your company before it was acquired by Microsoft.
I think I've been working in the collaboration software business for quite a while, and collaboration software is just technology that is intended to help organizations reduce coordination cost. I mean, this goes back to, Ron Coase and many, many people who have studied it. And, it's... Technology is not a panacea for reducing coordination cost. A lot of it is leadership and process and management practices. And unless you kind of step back sometimes, when you have very, very complex projects by design, unless you step back and kind of question what are the ways that we're structuring to revisit them, sometimes you don't take advantage of opportunities that you might be able to have to make things operate more seamlessly. In some cases, depending on the nature of the product, if a lot of innovation is required, if you really need to do a lot of, just whiteboard brainstorming, being together in a physical space is really a great way to do that. Oddly enough, in some projects, breaking them apart and putting them even geographically distributed introduces a barrier that forces you to have to overcome. And sometimes constraints can be liberating, and sometimes you can get more network done by introducing those constraints rather than having lots and lots and lots of little interruptions in a large project.
Now, do you think that we're talking about a significant cultural change at Microsoft? Are you going to be seen as a standard bearer of a significant shift in how things get made?
I think you'll have to ask people progressively over time who work there. I believe that changes like this have to happen locally. They can't happen by mandate. You really have to more or less go to a group. Different groups have different work styles. The office group has has a radically different way of structuring its processes than the Windows group, and that's different than the Xbox group. But each one, as I have an opportunity to talk with them, they'll hear my input. I'll listen. I've been listening to the pros and cons of different ways that they structure, and I think things have changed already in certain ways, and things will change over time. But it's not one person who makes this happen. It's the conversation.
Now, when 11 years ago Gates wrote a memo called The Great Internet Tidal Wave, I recall the coverage. I was working at Wired at the time, and I recall the coverage, which essentially was, a year later, Microsoft had turned on a dime. The great aircraft carrier of a company had spun around and steamed over Netscape within 18 months. This time, is this that kind of a memo? Is moving towards migrating towards a web services and a new business model of advertising and other potential models that might develop around services? Is it that big a deal again?
I think it's as big or bigger a deal from a business perspective, but it's not that necessary to turn in one day. I believe that it's important for each product, for each product group, to look at the customer, because this is, you have to focus on the end user, you have to focus on the customer first and foremost, and say what kind of experience in this era, given the bandwidth that we've got, given the types of devices that we've got, what in this era is the best way to deliver that value? If it's productivity value, if it's CRM, if it's this, that. Examine what the best delivery model for that type of value is. What kinds of things do people want to do on the web? What do they want to do when they're around here and they have their mobile phone? And then to reshape and re-architect that product using the...
This is what you call scenario-based design,
right?
Because oftentimes large companies say, what can I make out of the sausage factory I've currently got that I can foist upon the public? But you're seeing, and you note in the memo, all these innovative companies with very lightweight design principles that turn something out and then improve. Mm-hmm. That is not the problem. How long did it take for Vista to get made?
Or years.
Years, and Office to get updated. It's been 3 years. So do you feel like that's really taking?
It's definitely taking. I mean, just look at the nature of any organization that's particularly one that's been as successful as Microsoft. Microsoft's success began in the mid-80s, and this was a PC era. It was about personal empowerment, using the PC as a tool. And the most natural thing is to build upon that success. And then it expanded into servers, and now to build on that server success. The people in those groups, unless they are self-motivated to look externally and say what's going on the outside, are going to continue seeing things through a PC-based lens or through an enterprise server-based lens. And what I was hoping to do and what I've been trying to do is to help people to step back, step outside the actual delivery mechanism of that value and say, for the experience that you're trying to deliver to the customer, what's the best piece to put on the PC, mobile device, and web?
So let me ask you the question. I'm asking it later than I did everybody else, but I'm still going to ask you. What do you make of Google?
Very successful company. They've taken what was pioneered by Bill Gross and Overture, and have done just incredible things. And they've delivered good value to the users, and users have rewarded them with their attention, and now they've built a great ad ecosystem, and they're a force to be reckoned with for many people in the industry. I think that there's immense opportunity in the core space that they're in search, that I'm actually surprised at this point in time we haven't branched into. I mean, I believe there are many different ways of doing search contextually. I believe that There are a number of things, particularly in terms in the realm of refinement of search and things like that, that can help satisfy the user's intent more than we've seen thus far. But they've stayed focused on the user. This is something that I very much believe in, and I think that as long as you build properties that are focused on the user, you're going to have satisfied users.
Now, Google proved the advertising model for web services, I think, or at least is proving it, certainly for search, possibly for other services. Mm-hmm. That seems to be where they're headed. Mm-hmm. What's the general zeitgeist on the Microsoft campus as Google rolls out one and another, web-based word processing, web-based spreadsheets, mm-hmm. web-based mail, web-based calendaring, starting to look like the office suite, right? Now, Eric was here earlier claiming that he only is interested in consumers, which strikes me as everybody in the world. So is this something that... Do people sort of start to get angry when you talk about Google up in Redmond?
I think, depending on the personality, I think the personalities of, people in the company, and people are used to winning and
well, there's a chair throwing incident, for example.
I know nothing. Let me just tell you from my perspective.
Look at a bomber throwing chair.
From my perspective, when I look at what Microsoft has in the productivity space, we've got depends on how you count, but probably close to a half a billion users out there who use Office actively. And this is addressable market. Some of those users are paid users. Some of those are prospects for other services that we might be able to upsell them into.
Right.
From my perspective, I look at this thing and I go, what kind of an opportunity? I don't have to go out and buy companies and do this and do that to acquire new audience. I've got this audience. They understand the value proposition already. All I have to show them is that we get it and that we can deliver value in a way that's relevant to them and that's relevant to this era and that they want to use.
How long is it going to be till my interaction with Word as a writer or Excel as a spreadsheet jockey mm-hmm. is going to be completely web native? I'm not saying that it won't also exist on the client and there mm-hmm. won't be client software, but you just created in my mind this
right.
vision of me as a, as someone that's connected to Microsoft the way I feel connected
right.
to Google when I use their search service.
I think it depends on... Sorry, I'm going to come back to this. It depends on the scenario of usage. I don't see the way that things are panning out right now and the nature of how the technology works. I don't see that it's the right thing to do necessarily to just take the PC interface and functionality and just port it up onto the web. I think what you have to do
is... So you differ quite significantly from Eric, who in the first day of the conference pretty much declared... That's where it's going. End of story.
I believe that you have to look at what the web is really uniquely good at. It's good at universal access. It's good at sharing scenarios. It's good at quickly going in and out of something that if you happen to be online. And then you have to look at the things that the PC is really good at that the web doesn't necessarily have as its core strength, such as really, really flexible, fast UI, regardless of the connection speed. Reliable, a certain amount of reliability in a world where even with Wi-Fi, you're going from hotspot to hotspot, and you do, end up with drop-offs. We're actually going from a world in the 80s that was focused on use of the PC for document editing to a world where we're embedding different media types and things like that in what we do. And this is where the PC really has amazing strength. Mm-hmm. We're going to have terabyte hard disks. My JVC, camcorder has a 60, gigabyte hard disk in it that I take videos, drop it onto the PC. Will those things be streamed up to internet services? Absolutely. But we have constrained upload bandwidth.
Right.
And the media editing functions, that's what the PC was designed
right,
for.
Right,
so
right.
So I just think that there will be, if it's list sharing scenarios, scenarios where you've done some work and you want to organize people into a workspace very quickly and do some things like that, some of the things that we're doing in Office Live, those are the things that the web-based scenarios are going to just nail,
right.
And they'll complement with common file formats and the whole nine yards,
right.
The things that are going on the PC.
Guys, please come to the microphones for some questions. Mm-hmm. If you have any, feel free to. One last from me. Mm-hmm. It strikes me that when Bill Gates was chief software architect, mm-hmm. Bill Gates could go into a room, any room, and say, I don't think, as a matter, he was quite famous for this. Mm-hmm. His style, I think, may have been a little different from yours. it's just a guess, but never sat down with him like this, so. I wouldn't know, but as a matter of fact, he did one time storm into the editorial offices of Wired and tell us how dumb we were. So that's pretty much my one.
I'll try to live up to that.
But he had the ability to pretty much mandate something to happen.
Mm-hmm.
He not only was he chief software architect, he happened to be the founder of the company. Mm-hmm. Do you find that you have the authority you need to get things done in an organization as big as this? Mm. Or are you finding that you're going to be doing a lot more consensus building than perhaps Bill would have done in the same role?
It's a really good question. There is a certain mythology, of course, around any leader, particularly Bill, who's a really talented guy. He's very broad and very deep. He can engage in some very very deep technical conversations, even. Given his breath. There is the way that Microsoft works, it is very rare, very, very rare that Bill actually gave an order and said, go do this. Bill has and will always have an amazing level of soft power within the organization, and people want to follow. To be a good leader, you have to have good followership, and the organization reveres him and wants to do what he says that would be the right thing to do. For me, that's something that I was given a free pass coming in because I've known Steve and Bill for a long time. My companies have had a good relationship with various technical groups within Microsoft, so I came in with the benefit of the doubt. But I've got to earn, that followership, and that takes some time. I'm really fortunate that Bill has, given 2 years to this transition because people can see kind of us together, us interacting together in a number of different meetings. And, will the organization miss Bill? Absolutely. Are things challenging? Sure. And my interaction style is significantly different, but...
So
I'm
don't
very
rock,
optimistic.
You don't rock in the chair?
No.
You don't do that thing. All right. Questions back here?
Yes. David Elliston, SAP. So if the theme for this generation of Windows and Office is safety, and I really hope reliability, what will be the theme for the next generation if you look out 5 years to a new generation of Windows and Office and the desktop suite?
It's a good question. I mean, I think it's different for Windows and Office. I'll just say first that the way that the organizational processes work, really the product groups will define what that is. What I can tell you is kind of my intuitions as to where opportunity might be. But on the Office side, again, I think the biggest opportunity is that it's a world where mobile devices are exploding. Smartphones are very shortly going to be all phones, not just the differentiation between phone types that we've had in the past is changing. The web is pervasive, and I think that the scenarios there is tremendous opportunity on the Office side to take advantage of those of different types of productivity scenarios involving multiple different types. On the Vista side. And on the Windows side, I think there are, if you look at the natural hardware trends, just leaving safety aside, if you look at natural hardware trends, what's really happening right now is we're on the cusp of going from, kind of multi-core to many-core processor environments where PCs are going to have just many processors, and I think the system needs to help application programmers be able to consume that in a reasonable way without teaching everyone on Earth to be to understand that you know how to factor their code that way. I also think that I think many people here with laptops would probably agree that just in something as straightforward as power management, there's tremendous opportunity to innovate, and that really requires innovation at all levels of the system. There are other things that are kind of like hard problems that have been in the Windows domain for a long time that we're going to take the opportunity to address, such as state separation, which is keeping one app completely separate, from other apps in terms of its execution, but also its settings and things like that, so that deployment models can kind of be brought up to date. This concept of inserting a CD in setup.exe, from my standpoint, is dead. It should be gone. We're in an era where everything should deploy from the web. Things that you use on the client. I mean, when you go to a web page, you're bringing JavaScript down. You're bringing code down. A client-side install is bigger than Flash and bigger than JavaScript. But you shouldn't need a DVD to do that. And so I think Windows supporting those kinds of scenarios, there's tremendous opportunity.
We have time for a couple more questions.
Hi. In a world that's obviously more browser-centric, there's a big event going on, the IE7 upgrade. Do you personally think it was a good idea for Microsoft to bind the upgrading of IE7 so closely with license validation? And do you think that will drive the gray market Windows users more quickly onto Firefox?
I don't know. I don't know. The entire issue of license validation and what do you do if the license doesn't validate is a very dynamic issue that's discussed. There are many, many pros and cons of it. We are a company that makes money by selling our software, but on the other hand, my view is that unpaid users, if Office and Windows were services today, we would treat those unpaid users as prospects, as anonymous users, and I think there are multiple different ways of viewing it, and it's a conversation that continues.
Over here.
So Bruce Chizen was here earlier and pretty arrogantly claimed victory and said that in the realm of PDF and Swift files, game's over, you lost, they won. So I wonder if Microsoft is no longer going to play in that sandbox, and if you are, what's your response to Bruce's comments earlier?
Well, PDF, many PDFs are generated from Office products, and we would like that to be a default capability of the products. There are complex reasons why people don't want that. I think customers really do want that, but I would love that to be a base feature of Office. In terms of having a competitor to a file format, my basic attitude is as an industry we've lived with a number of file formats for many, many years, and to the extent that we're now in an era where customers are storing data forever. And that the data outlives any application that generated that data, it's imperative that we all vendors have products that create formats that give customer choice and have longevity in the data. Whether PDF is that storage format or XPS is that storage format, or there's other persistent formats for other types of things, I just think it's going to be the great thing about XML is at least it makes very transparent what's going on inside, as much more transparent than binary formats, and I just think that's the world that we're in right now.
Last question here.
Yeah, I had a question about Zune. My understanding is that Zune will not be compatible with Plays for Sure MP3 players, and the store won't be compatible either. I was wondering if you could kind of explain how Microsoft came up with the decision to go with a closed system for music at the risk of antagonizing partners and OEMs, and why that made sense for your business.
There was one very, very strong focus with Zune, and given the time frames, the development time frames and things like that that were involved, we really needed to stay focused on that, which was the goal of Zune was to build an end-to-end experience because customers have clearly stated that's what they want. Now, there are technologies inside of that end-to-end experience related to Windows Media and things that are useful far beyond our particular implementation of that experience. And we license it. That is the Plays for Sure platform, and we license those technologies far beyond it. Whether in the future we could investigate making Zune a Plays for Sure device or having the store license its music in that, those are all decisions that are, nothing is a forever a forever decision, but we never would have succeeded. I mean, being very, very, frank here, given the size of the team, given the time frames involved, we never would have succeeded at the end of experience if we put too many complexities and too many dependencies on the team at once.
Thank you. Now, Ray, thank you very much for coming and speaking with us. Thank
you. Thanks for having me.
Microsoft Chief Software Architect Ray Ozzie at the Web 2.0 Summit 2006. This podcast is brought to you by the Intel Software Network. Jumpstart your development of innovative applications with developer tools and resources from the Intel Software Network. Innovative applications begin with you. Use the Intel Software Network to find tools and resources that help you develop innovative applications. Find resources and best practices in our software developer communities. Connect with fellow developers to share ideas and learn best practices. Join the conversation in the Intel Software Network at intel.com/software.